Tubbs. I'm a librarian at Bradley University, and I get to lecture in the interactive media for critical game studies, will be the class I'm teaching this fall. How do we make games better? How do we make society better through the games we're experiencing? So if you have any questions, love to chat about games. Okay. So what are the point of board games in this digital age? I'm all about the tangible, physical, analog games. I also play a few digital games, and there are physical games I play digitally with people who live in different time zones, parts of my family that I can't connect with, but it still lets us continue to have a thing to talk around. And so often you'll may start where your family is. Maybe you'll be able to ask your family, let's compare the app to the in-person version. And especially connecting with our older family members who can say, my favorite part is shuffling. My favorite part is that time between you won and the next person deals, and we talk for a few minutes, and we can connect and banter, and we make those connections. Sometimes we'll find that certain games are easier to play digitally because they can do 27 things and hold all of this memory and make things spontaneous and new. But also, what is lost? That ritual of shuffling, that moment of centering. In Mahjong, the washing of the tiles has a special name, Shi Li Hua La, and it's the sound of a babbling brook. If you've heard the tile just clink, 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 clink. I met people in China who remembered that as the sound of going to bed while their parents were out and their grandparents were watching them. It was the game that was played downstairs. So what is fun? Do games have to be fun? There is a moment of enjoyment, and there's this concept of what is enjoyable. Sometimes exploring a difficult emotion doesn't leave a smile on our face, but it has enriched our understanding, helped us build some empathy with someone. Sometimes losing is awful, but it's also a great chance to experience, I'm still alive. The people around me are still talking to me, and I've learned something to try a little different next time. It's that lack of consequence in the real world that we could probably bring out and experience more so that we can realize, okay, this was a tactical loss, and it was a carefully chosen and planned tactical loss because of a long-term win weeks and months from now. It's really that reaction to the endorphins, that moment of, I didn't expect that to happen, that surprise. And not all of us react well to surprise. And learning who among us really love that surprise and who, I just need to know what's coming. I can still be happy for you when it happens, but can we just let me know that was going to happen because that was unsettling. We get positive feedback, which helps us learn a pattern. And modern games are starting to really build in this positive. There are differences between how psychology and training talk about positive feedback and statistics and positive feedback. And in games, the debrief afterward of giving feedback of, I saw you really struggled with this game, and I really appreciate that you didn't leave the table, that you didn't flip the board, that you helped us finish out the game and you shook hands with the other people at the table. I know how much of a growth experience that is because it's really important as an adult. But it doesn't feel good, right? It's not positive feedback for endorphins. And then the games that we're playing have this ability to help people who are at the front have a higher challenge so that they're not actually leaving the middle of the pack behind. And the people who are at the back, who may feel like they're losing, will actually get supports so that they're not left as far behind. And so that's called actually a negative feedback pattern that helps keep everybody engaged and involved and not left behind. If you're interested in learning more about these games, Rafe Koster has a blog, and he's a speaker you can find on YouTube, and he has books about the theory of fun, which is why he's on the fun slide. So I see games as an invitation, a way to meet new people, a way to learn about people that we're not so sure about. It's a really low stakes way. It's not self-centered, right? Speed dating. I have to talk to you about me. I have to make eye contact. And we only have 90 seconds to figure out if we like each other. Around a game that might be 5 or 10 minutes, I have a chance to find out, are you really good at bluffing? Do you love a betrayal game? I'm happy to let you go play with other people, and I'm going to find someone who feels just as awful when you have to bluff and has so many tells. You know exactly how to know they're being honest. These games can be quick. It can be a few moments, like a thumb war. 1, 2, 3, 4, I declare thumb war. Are they very aggressive? Are they playful? Do they also know how to see how you're responding and shorten the game so we can move on to something else? As Tony showed us, there's rules exploration. Some people are rules lawyers. They are so good at understanding complex interactions and how they'll manipulate each other. And other people are like, you know, that rule isn't a lot of fun in this moment. Let's leave it out. Let's help everyone enjoy the rest of this game, apply this new version fairly for everyone here. It's a great opportunity to practice etiquette, to say, hello, I may not be a very good sport, and I want you to know that up front, and I am working on it. And yeah, you may see me pause and not make eye contact for a while if my roles don't go very well in my favor. But then learning too that maybe the person across from you sits, has a bit of coaching to share, and at the end says, you did kind of okay. I'm not insulted. I'm not leaving and never going to play with you again. I can see that you're growing, and I look forward to playing with you as you become better at dealing with yourself and your reactions to unfortunate rolls of the dice. So this is why it builds bonds. There are these weak ties, this ability to say, I've seen your face, and I have a positive memory of we probably played a game, and it went okay. The more weak ties we have, the better we actually feel that there is somebody out there, that we're not alone, we're not isolated. So sometimes that goes through digital games and the chat channels where you're talking with people that you may never meet in real life, but you really connect with and can help them feel seen and they help you feel seen. And so what's the point of games? They actually provide what we're calling social-emotional learning to self-regulate, self-awareness, to also monitor yourself and build a little confidence, to build a little maturity about how to deal with unfortunate situations. There are even 8 traits people are starting to explore in this social-emotional learning. I won't lecture on all of them. And I mentioned the weak ties. Weak ties can also build into stronger ties. Someone that you've met, you waved at, your neighbor, someone you cross paths with because you walk the same routes with your dog. Eventually, you exchange names. Eventually, you say, oh, I can dog sit for you. Eventually, you could become family of choice. How do we start with those weak ties that maybe are neighbors, a coworker, a colleague, and then also practice them with our friends, practice them with our extended family, those people you see only once or twice a year. But imagine if you started Thanksgiving dinner with a couple of rounds of a game instead of just jumping straight into discussing all of the things we don't agree on. You can remember that this is a person and there are some things we have enjoyed in the past, and that builds up social credit between each other to say, I'm going to give you grace on this one. I remembered that you were really good at this thing, and we'll see if how far that grace can extend today. Maybe we'll have 15 minutes of conversation this year. And sometimes these weak ties grow into strong ties. And as I said, the strong ties become that family of choice that can really help you feel loved, feel calm, have a place. So how do you get into games? There's this thing called the teach that, how do you play this game you've never played before? How do I share this game I've played so many times with someone who's never done these things? The biggest thing I'm following this year in my research and as I'm working with students is consent, And consent is very political. It has to do with things like Title IX, but it also has to do with just growing up to say, I don't want hugs today. I don't want kisses from this relative. There was something weird. Learning that option to say no and to have somebody hear your no and not just smother it to the side, it's beautiful. And we can practice them in games. They're those rules of etiquette of how we play with each other. What's welcome at this table? What's welcome in the rules of the game? Are we allowed to bluff? Are we allowed to hide which cards we have? How honest and open do we have to be with our information? There are also tools you can introduce as the host of anyone at any time can say, let's not do that. You don't have to explain why. We're not going to pretend like the thing that happened before didn't happen, but we will be able to say, then let's pause and change. Perhaps after, there will be an opportunity to follow up to say, would you like to talk about what happened? Is there something I can do different next time? But I don't require that you re-traumatize yourself by telling all of us why something triggered you, and you don't have to perform that in public, and I don't have to ensure someone performs an apology that they don't feel until they've had time to process that and think about it in a separate space. So the big part about a teach is to start with the minimum instruction. We're not going to go through the whole rule book before we get to the end. It can be tricky, like we saw with Tony, of everybody knows how to play this. Let's go. Oh, you don't know that thing. Okay, but now we know that thing, so cool, let's go. So learning how much to teach, how to say things like, my family makes tuna fish with olives and onions and celery. Yeah, I saw some people say, what? I know. When I first went to a friend's house and they made tuna fish with grapes and apples and raisins, I felt the same. This is how we learned that, like, there are people in the world that are different than me. Things I didn't know. And games can also offer that for us, and a place to say, like, oh, okay. And then we build every few rounds. I learned not only do my friends make sweet tuna salad, but they also do their dishes right after dinner. It's a beautiful idea to aim for. Beautiful. I have no idea how to get there in my life. And you build, and you learn a more complicated technique or a more meaningful way to trust and build empathy and have more grace around complicated conversations. Some of these skills that we're learning are turn-taking. Who remembers Candyland? It's just a lesson in how to have patience to take turns. It's not technically a game. There's no meaningful agency to choice. It just gets you from the beginning to the end. But it's colorful, and at the level of the people it's designed to teach, it can feel like a game because you look like you're doing the things other people do with cards and a thing and a track. And so it does what it needs to do, but we've also moved into beautiful new places in the last 30 years with completely different games for all different ages. Things like multi-step thinking. Oh, I need to not do this thing right now, because if I save my money, next time I can do the really big, cool thing that I've been wanting to do for the last 4 times, and I never have enough money. And we get life skills out of that. We also learn about alternative consequences, that I could play through the game fast with no money this time and see that I still got to the end, but maybe next time I'll be really mindful of my money and see, is it worth it to save my money in those early rounds to spend it on big things? And that there are many ways to get through the game and many ways to feel like you've been successful or not. It's just curiosity. And we can translate that into real life, especially in a year with an election cycle of what are the choices we make? How early do we make those plans? How much can we look back afterwards and say I was invested or involved? So what are my goals in explaining games to people? That people will try many things. Let go of the way you've always played it, just because you've always played it that way. Learning persistence, But the key of persistence is often to pause, to maybe step away and recover, and then try to come back with people you trust. That's how we learn through failure. We're learning in education experiential projects teach so much more than lecture. Lecture is a very quick way to get through the content, and then the stuff falls out of your brain just as quickly as it came in. But struggling and failing makes your brain have more friction, more stick. And so once you figure out an alternative, it stays in your brain and you retain it into real life. These growths are often small things, but they can become fundamental that you always come back to, that I can trust this person, that I can try a new technique and not suffer as many consequences as I'm worried about. The repetition is actually the key. As a librarian, children's story time is where I learned that repeating the same story every time for the same kids at that developmental level is how they learn that you can predict things and that they are trustworthy and it's worth remembering things because it'll come up, and that that's why this later thing happened, because this earlier thing started it. Learning about consequences isn't fun all the time, but it is important. And finally, building that connection, that these many small interactions with these light consequences of, I lost a game of cards to somebody, but they really enjoyed winning that game of cards against me. That's priceless. So there's a link here to Mesh Helps, which is a group trying to explain the social emotional learning. They just use the other acronym to talk about some of the research they've pulled in with games and things people are learning. I do get a lot of pushback about games. And sometimes there was game trauma. Sometimes you had to play Monopoly with that cousin that had no sportsmanship and just ground it in. And there's no reason to not feel awful. Your experience needs to be affirmed and validated and leave you the choice to come explain other games with other people to see if there is an opportunity for you. Learning how to teach, it's really hard. I'm really good at being a student in school. I had to go to 2 graduate programs to learn how to teach, and I'm still learning. There's a lot of resistance because of inertia. Conflict isn't fun. Learning conflict resolution isn't exactly fun, but it is priceless. And it is a skill more and more of us need in a world when we have election cycles every couple of years. It's also a huge part for me in games is in individuation, saying, I don't like the same kind of games as you do. And we don't have to play this game. You can play this game and I will come back in an hour. And then we'll play the game I like, or this other game that both of us do agree that we like. And it's okay to not just approve of everything everybody else already likes. And then learning to adapt. I don't like the way you play this game, and you don't like the way I play this game. And there's this third way as someone introduced me to play this game that I'm not good at. That means you're also not good at yet, and we can have some actual competition, some challenge. Those communication tools or consent tools are really about finding boundaries to say, I have the energy to play one game today, a short game. And then on the other days when I have a lot of energy, I would really like to play a game that takes 4 hours. Do you have 4 hours? This is going to be so much fun. I have also learned a very important boundary for me. I can play a new game with people I've played a lot of games with. I cannot play a new game with strangers. It's just overwhelming. I don't know enough about you. I don't know enough about the game. And I'm just, so I can play a new game with friends. And I can play a well-experienced game with complete strangers where I can teach them about it. And I can learn about them and what they're doing in the game. So I hope you're interested in exploring games. I think I have 1 or 2 more slides. Because of the influence that we will have on culture and society, we can build a sense of community. Who plays those games? The Mahjong group, the bridge group, the massively multiple online role-playing groups, the solo groups, the role-playing and personality groups and storytelling groups. Am I competitive? Apparently. But do I prefer cooperative games? Absolutely. How do we learn about budgeting? Money is just so ephemeral. It's just a tap on a phone. I don't actually see my paycheck. I don't actually see the bills anymore. So how do I remember to save? How do I remember to budget? What's left? It can help us connect to the concept of values in our culture. Is consent important? Are communication boundaries important? How do we know whom we can trust? When is it okay to lie and cheat and steal? Because it's a game, and that was the whole point. It was designed to show us the problems with those things, or let you blow off that steam so that you can then go be a good person for a little while. And having that agency to say, I get to choose. If you're someone who'd never had to worry about not getting your choice heard, that's very lucky for you. But for many of us, our choices weren't always heard. And making an opportunity and a space for somebody to say, can I have this? Really? That's priceless. So if you're interested on some games to explore, can I get a show of hands as we go through this list to see if you've heard of them? Code names? Yeah. Word games are the best. Seven Wonders. Yeah. Set. S-E-T. Oh my God. Lovely geeky game. Carcassonne. Some people recognize the shirt. Carcassonne is also a city in France, and that's why the chaotic city construction. Telestrations. Yes. And you may have played versions of Telestrations where it's Pictionary and guess the word, back and forth Pictionary and draw a picture and guess the word. Sushi Go. Yes, collections, cards, lovely. Ticket to Ride. Oh, yeah. Modern train games. Catan. Yeah, I love to critique Catan like you wouldn't believe. And Azul. Azul is also available at most of your public libraries if you haven't played this beautiful tile game. If you're also worried about, well, what are the games worth exploring? You don't have to take my word for it. Thank you, Mr. Burton. This is from John Perkis. He's under the name Actual, like LOL, both on Board Game and YouTube. He has family, so he has young kids, and he explains couples games, families games, the games you don't want to spend your money on, great games with kids. So these are broken down into the competitive kind, and if you love a dice roller, Dice Forge for the win. You get to make the dice different. I love it. Sagrada, another dice roller, beautiful colored dice. And then you're making these patterns on your little square. And Sagrada is a church in Spain that's still having glass windows made. And Sheriff of Nottingham, which is all about lying and cheating and stealing as the sheriff. So get that steam out of your system. Now, if you prefer, like me, the cooperative games, Pandemic, which was a bit dicey to play in 2020, 2021. We always won, so I'm pretty sure that's why we got out. So you know, Forbidden Desert or Forbidden Island, which are a great introduction to these kinds of games. Very easy to learn, and the power of these asymmetric characters where we have a navigator and a planner and a hefty person and someone who's a medic to save people. Magic Maze. This is one of Evan's favorite games, and it took me a while to like it. And there are still parts that I don't like, but it is a hilarious D&D escape the mall with just beautiful mechanics. Very not D&D, it's just the layer and the theme. And Mysterium, introduced to me by a friend here. She loves this game. And it is so much fun to play with her because you can see how much she enjoys it. There's a lot of guesswork, so if you like those social deduction games of the mystery and who done it, it's an opportunity for that kind of puzzle. So what are your next steps? besides being able to go out and celebrate Melissa and maybe stick around for some Mahjong this afternoon. We're going to try at the bottom to try many things. This is the hardest part. I've been part of a librarian group that really loves game-based learning for over 6 years. I cannot get them to play. You cannot teach with games unless you're playing them to know which ones are relevant and good. So please go try many, many things. There are several stores in town and in Bloomington where there's a lending library. Our libraries will lend them to you, so there's no cost to you to try these out. You're going to have this growth. So there's going to be uncertainty. It's going to feel uncomfortable because it'll be different, and it's worth it. It's totally worth it. I feel my generation is choosing our retirement homes based on their game systems and Wi-Fi capacity, right? Like, if you aren't thinking about this yet, ask. And the goal at the top is that we'll have connection, a sense of belonging, someone to lean on for mutual support to say, I don't know if I'm going to like this game. I don't know either, but it's only 30 minutes, so we can survive. So if you have any questions, you can email me. I think they'll be able to share out the slides so you can follow the link to a podcast called Touchy Subjects, which kind of breaks down all of these concepts of consent and communication and agency. And thank you very much. I'm on to the next person.